Now, rachamim, empathy, as we know in the configuration of the 10 spheres, chesed is on the right, and gvura is on the left. Chesed is the emotion of love, and gvura is the emotion of rejection, of severity, of animosity, of discipline. And in the center is rachamim, like a segel, like a triangle, being in the center, symbolizing the synthesis, the integration of the two. Because rachamim is similar to chesed and gvura, and also different. She accepts and acknowledges flaws just like gvura does. But her conclusions are similar to ahava, to chesed. Gvura, the sense of judgment, of discipline, sees a flaw, sees a negativity, sees a misbehavior, and judges it that way. That's its conclusion. The feeling of love is not objective. Doesn't consider the facts. Ignores it. Is not interested in the objective truth. Rachamim is a little more complex. It's comprised of both elements. It recognizes the flaw, but instead of creating a feeling of hate because of it, it says, I feel bad for the person. Instead of saying, feh, I say, ah, I become even closer. On the contrary, the greater the flaw, the more the rachamim, the more the sense of closeness. So what does this accomplish? Why is this important? This makes sure that the animosity is relegated to the negative element of this Jew and doesn't spread. It doesn't spread in my heart and doesn't pervade. In my heart, it doesn't include the totality of the human being. On the contrary, what's the feeling I get in my heart when I think about this person? Love. Because when I feel bad for someone, at that moment you can't hate the guy. It just doesn't work together. So the rachamim breaks the distance. It removes somewhat of the barriers. So for example, when it comes to the issue of, should I do a favor for him? To whom are you doing the favor? Are you doing a favor to the divine soul, to the animal soul? You're doing a favor to the guy, to the man, to the general person. You do it. And Alter Rebbe adds that this is known from the pasuk Yaakov Asher Padas Avraham. You remember from where this pasuk is? We just said it in the Haftarah. This Shabbos Parshas Shmos. It's a pasuk from Yeshaya, Perek Chof Tes. Hashem promises there the redemption of the Jewish people, and he says, "Lachen kayam an Hashem al beis Yaakov Asher Padas Avraham layevish Yaakov," which literally means Hashem tells al beis Yaakov, to the community of Jacob, to the Jewish people, that this Hashem who redeemed Avraham tells Beis Yaakov that Yaakov won't be embarrassed in the future. The Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that if you test the meaning of this pasuk, that Yaakov personally redeemed Avraham from Tsar Gidl Banim. The responsibility of bringing the Shvatim and raising them was Avraham's responsibility. And Yaakov substituted Avraham, he redeemed him from it. In Chassidus, this pasuk is explained often, particularly in the Alter Rebbe's discourses, in the psychological and spiritual life of the human being. Avraham personified love. Yaakov personified rachamim, empathy. Sometimes a person is incapable of love. Avraham, the Avraham in me, finds itself in prison. I can't experience my real vulnerability, my real sense of love, for various reasons. People are sometimes scarred, abused, and pained in a way that the Avraham becomes locked up and suppressed. Who redeems Avraham? Yaakov. Rachamim. You see that even a person who's very locked up and incapable of true emotions, every person is capable of feeling bad for himself, of having rachmonis. If I don't love, at least I can have pity on myself that I'm incapable of love. If I can't love, I can cry about the fact that I can't love. So rachamim breaks the walls. Rachamim redeems Avram, it redeems the love. And it's in fact, a person who's incapable of feeling any compassion for himself is a psychological vegetable, heaven forbid. And then it's very difficult to redeem anything. Only in extreme circumstances. But normally, rachamim is a force that allows the Ahava to come out. And the same is true regarding another person. If I can't love him, I can feel bad for him. And that itself brings out the love. And the Alter Rebbe adds in parentheses, V'loy Amar David HaMelech Alav HaShalom Tachlis Sina Sneisim V'Goymer. David HaMelech Alav HaShalom did not make the statement in Tehillim Perikof Lamatas. I hate them with the utmost hatred, etc. Ela al haminim va'apikursim she'ein lem chelag be'elekei Yisrael. Only in reference to Jewish heretics and atheists who have no part in the God of Israel. K'di'isa b'gemara reish perik tazayin de Shabbos. As stated in Gemara in the beginning of the 16th chapter of Masechta Shabbos. And Masechta Shabbos there, the Gemara talks about Sifrei Minim. Sifrei Torah, Torah scrolls that were transcribed in Hebrew with kosher ink by Minim, as Rashi explains, Mesharsim La'avodah Zarah, Jews who adopted idolatrous beliefs. In fact, the Aruch interprets this Gemara as referring to the early Christians who were Jewish. What do you do with their Sifrei Torah during the weekdays? Rabbi Yossi says you cut off the divine names, the names of Hashem, the Askaris, and you burn the rest. Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Shmuel hold, and that's the halacha, that you burn the entire Sefer Torah, even the divine names. And Rabbi Shmuel said on them that these minim are the ones who create jealousy, enmity, dissension, hatred between Hashem and their Father in heaven, and on them David said, Tachlis, on this type of character, David said, Tachlis sinas nesim, they I hate with utmost hatred. They create sinna between Hashem and the Jewish people. He says, Madach, the issue is if we allow to erase Hashem's name that they wrote. He says, Madach, when it comes to Saita. We want to make shalom between a man and his wife, between husband and wife. Hashem says, erase my name in the water as the din of Saita. So these people who destroy the relationship, you can for sure erase the name and get rid of their Sefer Torah. The Alter Rebbe adds here the word apikursim, which the Rambam in Hilchis Tshuva Perigimel defines clearly minim and apikursim as people who deny the existence or the unity of Hashem, deny prophecy, the concept of prophecy, the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, and so forth. And the Alter Rebbe adds, in this case, you're dealing with people she'ein lam chelag b'elekei Yisrael. These Jews have a soul, just like I have a soul. And we're brothers, because their soul is part of my soul. But since they separated themselves from elekei Yisrael, so they totally separated their life absolutely from their own divine soul. They detached themselves from their connection to elekei Yisrael, which means from their connection in the cosmic divine eye, which makes us brothers. So in a revealed conscious way, we're not brothers, and my love cannot relate to them. Because their soul plays no role whatsoever. It has been relegated to them and repressed and buried in the most hidden elements of their psyche. So in this case, the Alter Rebbe says, here there's an exception. Since Elam Chelek Belekei Yisrael, so here we say, Tachlis Sinas Nesim. Versus the other type of Rasha we discussed earlier, not the Minim and Apikursim, where the Alter Rebbe said, there's a mitzvah to hate and there's a mitzvah to love. Because of the Taiva Gan is a Taiva that's hidden in them.
Well, can't I say it's the same Rasha than a donkey?
It's not Minim Apikursim.
That's why. The Gemara
says, "Arayid var ever b'chaveire." Masech the Pesachim, the Lashon is "Arayid var ever b'chaveire." He sees his friend engaging in an immoral act, and that itself, even the mitzvah to hate, are only with the qualifications mentioned above, like we discussed. Not in any other case. And there's a story about the Baal Shem Tov. You know, in the Baal Shem Tov's times, there was the movement of the Frankists. They're called?
Yeah.
The Frankisten. Founded by Jacob Frank, who perpetuated the teachings of the false Mashiach Shapsi Tzvi, and the Baal Shem Tov fought them unequivocally. In 1757, there was a big debate in Poland where they convinced the bishop of Poland that the Gemara is an unethical document, and the bishop decreed that all the Gemaras in Poland should be burnt, which occurred in the month of Kislev 1757. The Baal Shem Tov sent a warning to the bishop that it will cost him his life, and during the burning he died. In fact, in 1759 there was another debate, and the chief spokesman for traditional Jews against the Frankists was Reb Chaim HaKohen Rappaport, who was a student of the Baal Shem Tov. And during that debate, they attempted to show the Christians that the Jewish people used non-Jewish blood for their ritual observances, and most of the Frankists then were baptized and converted to Christianity. And the story is told, when the Baal Shem Tov heard what happened, he was very, very aggravated, although he fought them tooth and nail. And the Baal Shem Tov said then that an organ, a limb, even if it's almost totally severed from the body, but there's still a few strings that attach it to the body, it still has some hope. There's still hope of healing. But once the organ cut itself off from the body totally, that organ will never be healed again. And every Jewish soul is an organ from the Shekhinah. And that's why he was so aggravated. Mention should just be made, parenthetically, that as the Rebbe would often point out, and nowadays it's very, very, very difficult to find this type of min and apikairis that Alter Rebbe is describing here from Gemara, Masechet Shabbos, Daf Kuf Tazayin, because as the Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim, that when we talk about a kaifer, a min and apikairis, you're dealing with a Jew who is educated, a Jew who knows what Torah is, who knows what mitzvahs are, and then rejects the basic doctrines of Yiddishkeit in this fashion. But when you're dealing with, the Rambam gives an example, let's say a Jewish kid was kidnapped when he was a child by non-Jews, and he was raised in their environment, and then he goes and believes what they believe. Of course, do you blame him? And in our case, in our generation, most, 99%, and the Rambam already says it about Jews in his generation, Jews who are uneducated and Jews who don't know, who are ignorant, who were never taught, who were never inspired, who have erred perceptions, stereotypes, and so forth, don't go into this definition. And the contrary, as the Rambam says in Hilchos Mamrim, it's a mitzvah, like the Alter Rebbe uses concerning other Jews, even other Jews, that it's a mitzvah to bring them closer and to be makarev them, and the Rambam says to shower them with love and closeness, and to teach them Torah and Yiddishkeit in a positive way, with positive energy. Now, all of this that the Alter Rebbe is addressing is talking about a healthy Jew, a spiritually healthy Jew, who's connected with his soul, and therefore, even when there's a case of Sina, it's exclusively that Sina that is described in this chapter, which is warranted and justified by Torah. Now we have to remember, when we, God forbid, hate someone in our life, it sometimes has other elements, even if it presents itself and we define it as being a result of our spiritual beliefs and so forth. Sometimes, and Alter Rebbe doesn't address that here, because here he's talking about the healthy way. Sometimes I can hate someone, and someone says, why do you hate him? Or I tell myself, why do I hate him? Why do I have such negative feelings towards him? Because he's a Rasha. Because he's a wicked, obnoxious, lowly person. Often that comes because of my ego, my animalistic self, my negative attributes, my problems, my wounds, my voids. I'm an unrefined. And this is something that's sometimes very difficult to notice and pinpoint. Because as mentioned earlier, hate has its own intensity and its own dynamics. And it comes across sometimes as very holy and idealistic and spiritual and godly, when often it's a result of my own wounds and my own unhealthiness and so forth. And for this, a person has to examine himself when he experiences such a feeling and he wants to justify it. He has to examine himself in a very honest way and usually seek the advice and ask a question by someone who's objective and not subjective. And in this context, I saw an interesting gvart in Gemara. The Gemara in Brachas Daf Chav Chesamet Beis says that Shimon HaPakuli, Shimon the cotton merchant, established and formulated the 18 blessings of Shmei Nesir in front of Rem Gamliel in Yavna. And then Rem Gamliel told the Chachamim, Klum Yesh Adam Sheyedei L'Sakin Berchas Haminim. Is there a human being who knows how to formulate the 19th blessing against the heretics? V'lamal Shinim Alti Yisikva. Where we curse the heretics and so forth. Is there a person who can establish that blessing? Zag the Gemara in Brachas Amat Shmuel HaKatan V'Tikna. Shmuel HaKatan arose and established that blessing. So people ask the question, why is this blessing different than any other blessing? That Rabbi Gamliel went to the Chacham and said, can you find a person who can formulate this blessing? You have to find Shmuel HaKatan. And the answer is, because this blessing is drastically different. To formulate and write a blessing with all the curses included in it, against the Malshinim and the Malshinim, the Minim and the Zaydim and the Oivei Amcha. We need a person whom we are certain and secure that in his psyche he doesn't even have an iota of individual egotistical animosity to all these Malshinim, Minim, Zaydim and Oivei Amcha. It's totally for the sake of truth, for the sake of health, for healthy reasons, for the sake that this world should be a beautiful and holy place, that Hashem's vision should be introduced into the world. Shmuel HaKatan, who used to say, as we say in Pirkei Avos, Perek Dalet, Benefoilevecha al tismach, Bekashle al yagel lebecha, when your enemy falls, you shouldn't rejoice. Shmuel HaKatan knew how to rise above personal prejudices and so forth. He had to find such a person who can write V'lam al shinim al tisikva, because it's a different type of sina. And one of the most conspicuous features to distinguish from where the sina is coming is to see how this Jew behaves relative to issues of love. Even a Jew who believes that you have to hate sometimes, or certainly there's a mitzvah to love. So if he has the same geschmack in doing a favor to someone else and in loving another Jew, no, that was Shmuel HaKatan. But if, when it comes to sina, there he becomes the Torah Jew, so then usually it's not coming from Torah, it's coming from a personal issue. And now I want to conclude with one more idea, which is something that's also very important to understand and discussed in Chassidus. And I wanted to specifically mention this because I believe it answers your question. You asked why the Alter Rebbe says v'gam ha'mekuravim elava hechicham, and he doesn't include the words v'gam ha'chaveirav b'teiro mitzvahs. Reb Nachum Chernobyler, in the Sefer Moir Enayim in the beginning of Parshas Chukas, quotes the Baal Shem Tov as saying a very interesting, enigmatic, and powerful statement. Your fellow Jew, Zog de Baal Shem Tov, is your mirror. If your own face is clean, the Moir Enayim writes in those words, if your own face is clean, the image you perceive will also be flawless. But should you look at your fellow man and see a blemish, Zag de Baal Shem Tov, it's your own blemish and imperfection that you're encountering. You are being shown that which you must heal in yourself. And the Moir Enayim continues that therefore the Baal Shem Tov said that Hatzadik Hagomur She'ein Rabbi Kirboy Ein Roya Shum Ra'al Shum Adam. The Tzadik Gomur doesn't have any negativity within him, doesn't see any evil in any person, because seeing evil in another person is a mirror. It's a reflection, a projection of what's in me. What does the Baal Shem Tov mean? How can a tzaddik ever correct anyone? Aren't there hundreds and hundreds of stories of tzaddikim who made Bali Tshuva? But if they never saw any negativity, they never saw a flaw, they never saw a negative deed, they never saw a negative attribute, what's there to heal? What's there to correct? So we have the case of Reb Zusha Anipali, who never saw negativity, and when a Jew stole $50... he couldn't even perceive that it begins to be a thief, as we discussed. But that's a Jew who lives in another world, who lives in an oasis of good, and there's no evil in his world. The Baal Shem Tov is saying that every time you or I see evil in someone else, I'm seeing my own. And let's not talk about a tzaddik. Why is it not possible that I should see a negative attribute in you? And it shouldn't be a projection of myself. How many times a day does that happen to us in our own perception? Did you see today anyone do anything negative at work? Does it mean that you did it? What if someone says a lie in my presence? The tzaddik thinks it's truth? It's difficult to understand. So here I want to share with you briefly, time is late, a very fascinating explanation of the Rebbe on this issue, in which we also see how in Chassidus, halacha, psychology and spirituality are one. Everybody knows the Gemara in Pesachim Dav Gimel. A person should never emit a coarse expression. How do we know this? In Parshas Noach, when the Torah discusses the kosher and non-kosher animals that went into Noach's ark, the Torah uses the expression, the pasuk could have said, Tameh, habehema hatmeah. Hatmeya would have been five letters. Instead, the pasuk says, Asher einena tahira, consisting of 13 letters. We have superfluous, excessive, unnecessary eight letters. Torah Shebiksav is extremely meticulous on every letter. Why? To teach us that a person, instead of saying Tamei, should say that behema which is not tahir, which is not clean, instead of saying that it's Tamei, that it's contaminated. And then the Gemara goes on to discuss some other issues. And then the Gemara asks a question. In the Torah, doesn't say the word Tameh. And the Gemara explains what it explains, which we won't get into at the moment. And some commentators ask that the delay of the Gemara in asking this question is mind-boggling. If you open up a Chumash, you'll see that in Chumash, how many times does it say Tameh in Chumash?
That's where I learned the word Tameh.
That's where you learned it from. How many times do you think it says Tameh in Chumash? Take a guess. You're a Bal Kaida. More than 100 times. More than 100 times. So Gemara says the Torah wants to use a Lashon Tar. Fine vocabulary. Subtle language. More than 100 times. Not another time. Nevertheless, the Gemara delays the question. And how does the Gemara ask it? The Gemara doesn't say, the Gemara asks, doesn't it say Tameh as if it would be a chiddush that it says Tameh? So some commentators explain, among them the Tzlach, that there is a big distinction to be made between two types, between two issues, between halacha and between telling a story. When your Torah is telling us a halacha, a law of how to behave, how to live, in halacha, our priority is to convey the issue in the clearest fashion possible. And therefore, we compromise our desire to use extremely fine, subtle, and elegant language for the sake of clarity. So when it comes to halacha, the Gemara never even thought or had a question why the Pasuk uses Tameh, because the Pasuk wants to be clear. You should know this is Tameh, and thus don't eat it, don't consume it, don't come in contact with it, and so forth. But by Noach, it's a story. The Torah is telling us a story. When you're telling a story, it's not relevant to a person's actual practical behavior. So their elegance and subtlety takes precedence over clarity. And thus, the Torah says, Asher einena tahira. And therefore, when the Gemara asks the question, it's about those few cases where the Torah is conveying an episode or a tale or a story and still uses the word Tameh. So the answer of these commentators is that what? And halacha, as mentioned, the purpose of clarity takes precedence over everything. And it pays to express ourselves in a somewhat of a coarse fashion for the sake of clarity. The Rebbe once explained the answer much deeper. When the Torah is articulating and expressing the word tame in the context of halacha, it's not coarse language. It's a din. It's not coarse language. When you're telling a tale and you use the word tame, it's coarse. When the term is being used in context of telling us a Torah law, so the word tame is not coarse, it's a halacha in Torah. You're not identifying that thing or that person or that event as tame. Your concern is what the Torah says and how the person should behave. When I see evil in another person, when I see something negative in another person, I could see it in two ways. As a halacha, and as a story. As a halacha, it means I see a negative attribute. I see a negative deed. I see an evil pattern, whatever it may be. What do I see in this? A halacha. I see it. And what is my reaction? What do I see? What does this observation hold in it for me? A halacha. What am I supposed to do about it? It guides me towards a certain behavioral pattern. For example, there's a halacha that I have to rebuke and reprove my fellow Jew. Or other halachas, whatever they may be. What do I see? What is my observation? What do I notice? What do I emphasize the implications of this event on my life? Then there is a concept where I don't see it as a halacha, I see it as a story. The fact that you did evil or you have a behavior, an evil flaw and so forth, is a story. It's a tale. It has an end. It's an end in and of itself. What is the story? This person is obnoxious. This person is lowly. This person is bad. It's a story. It's a story, of course, like every story that deserves to be told to someone else also. In other words, when I see a negative flaw, there is seeing a halacha. I don't see it as a definition of the human being. I could see it. But what do I see? I don't see it as being a definition of the human being. I see it as telling me something to do. And that's the healthy way of approaching it. Why? Why should I be compelled to define you? I am a human being. I have to know what I have to know. I have to know how I have to live. What is compelling me? What is driving me to define you in this context? The drive to define you is coming because there's something in me that I want to cover up. When I hate someone, when someone hates someone, in many cases, we hate something in him that is part of ourself. What is not part of ourself doesn't disturb us in that way. It's not a coincidence that when I point a finger on you, I'm pointing four fingers on myself simultaneously. What compels me to point a finger on you? What drives me to see this story as a definition of you? A healthy person sees the story as a halacha. What is in it for me? What are the implications to me? But then there's I see your evil and that evil consumes me. It eats up me. It triggers me. It urges me to point a finger on you, to make a story out of it. Oh, you know what type of person you are. You and this and this. That feeling doesn't come from the evil in you. It comes from something in me. if I'm totally liberated, if I'm totally liberated from it, there's no need to point a finger at someone else. I don't have the urgency to define you. Why should I want to define you? What do I? What's habich from them? The evil in you, there's certain halachas. There's a certain way how one is to interact with every phenomenon. There's a healthy, spiritual, divine way to interact with the world, to interact with other people, to interact with a negative act and a negative flaw. And that, of course, I know, and I behave that way. But then there's the next stage. There's where I get caught up in it, where it eats up in me, where it becomes part of my life, where you become the issue. It's a story. When tame is halacha, it's not ra. When tame is a story, it's coarse. If it's not part of my world, I do what I have to do and I go on. Now, this might sound new and impractical. Check it out next time and you'll see. It's always. A tzaddik gomer, Zag de Baal Shem Tov, doesn't see any ra in any person. Not because, God forbid, he's naive or he doesn't see what we see. He sees everything we see. We're not talking about the Reb Zusha type. We're talking about the Rebbe type, as we discussed. He sees everything. He sees everything I see. But since he's freed, he's chilled, he's liberated from those blemishes, the other person's blemish doesn't own his space because he doesn't have that flaw. If I'm not a tzaddik, part of your blemish is in me, in that particular issue. In other words, if I suffer from what you suffer in some subtle way, it bothers me, it eats me up. That's part of me is there, and I'm compelled to define you. The tzaddik is freed from it, is liberated from it. So when he sees it, he sees a halacha. Period. It's a hard way to live, but it's a beautiful way to live. It's a tough way to live. When you get really angry with someone, you know, if certain people get us really angry, they rub us wrong. Your neighbor in shul or something. Certain people rub us the wrong way. They get us angry. They get us resentful. They get us to hate. It has nothing to do with them. Nothing. It's just the psyche knows how to produce a nice cover-up. Of course it has to do with him. He's obnoxious. He's a lowlife. If you don't have that, you don't hate him because of it. You have to behave in a certain way to protect yourself, to live a virtuous way, maybe to talk to him, whatever you have to do. Obviously, of course. It's a halacha. That's what it is. It's not a story. It's not news that's fit to print. Not to print in the newspaper and even to print in your own mind. It's not worth the data. It doesn't have data that's worthy of being inculcated in your psyche. Doesn't have that to it. Doesn't have that value and significance. A Jew has to live, celebrate, grow, develop himself, herself, and continue to live. The consumption of it is because of a certain issue that I have to work through in myself. And you'll see this in our counters day by day. It's true, especially with people that you're close with, and so forth, a spouse, close friends, children, and so forth. Things that really get us angry are things that we have to deal with. Why do you think the great tzaddikim, the students of the Baal Shem Tov and their contemporaries and so forth, hung out with all types of people? You read those stories, how they hung out with all types of people, even people that were on an opposite extreme, and they remained in their spiritual plateau and in their spiritual level without any compromise. How did Reb Nachman of Breslov sit and with Uman and play chess with the Maskilim? How did Reb Moshe Leib Sosever go to the gambling bars? This is the Holy of Holies. Reb Simcha Binim of Pshischa would also play games with the enlightened people and so forth. When you're really liberated spiritually, it's a halacha. That's what it is. So the Baal Shem Tov says another person is a mirror. If you're flawless in that particular issue, you won't see a flaw. If you see a flaw, it's not a flaw. It's a halacha. It's not a definition. You have a flaw. It's a definition only vis-a-vis my behavior. That's its whole definition. That period. There's no independent definition. That's not Tameh. That's not Ra. Like in the Gemara in Pesach. So I wanted to add that this is another possible way of interpreting the message in this Perek. Hating someone for his ra means being entangled with his ra. Zogdal Tireb. The main emphasis that justifies the sina is the mekurovim elof. The fact you're close to him, he's part of your world. You rebuked him. You dealt with him in the ra. You tried to fix it, to heal it. Now it became part of your world. Now it justifies sina. Now it's ra. So the Alter Rebbe begins. Whom are you allowed to hate, first of all? Chaveri b'teira mitzvahs. Because chaveri b'teira mitzvahs makes it something which is real ra. He's amazed. He knows what he's doing. And there has to be a chacha. But he who is not your chaver, and the Alter Rebbe adds, he's not mekuriv to you. So even if he does whatever he does, his ra doesn't create a sin in you. Why should you, you're Hashem's policeman. Why are you compelled to start hating people? There's no such a thing. A healthy person doesn't do that. You own your own space. Why do other people's negativity make hatred in you? Hamakuravim elav, if they're part of your life, aichichem, and you're dealing with them. In other words, that's the key issue. That's the key issue, the kirov element. Let's conclude with a little anecdotal vart. The Rebbe Maharash, the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, had two sons. That son, which became Rebbe after his life, the Rebbe Rashab, Rebbe Shalom Ber, who was the younger brother. He had more than two sons. He had three sons. He had four sons. Rebbe Avraham Sender. The oldest was Rebbe Zalman Aaron, known as the Razah, or Rebbe Avraham Sender, and the Rebbe Rashab, Rebbe Shalom Ber, and the youngest, Rebbe Nachem Mendel. Rebbe Avraham Sender passed away as a lad of eight. The Rebbe Rashab was a year or two younger than the Razah, but taller than him. Something which aggravated the Razah immensely. When they were little kids, they were once playing in the park in the city of Lubavitch near their father's home, and there was a pit. So the Razah, who was, I think, six, and the Rebbe Rashab, who was four or five, they were playing together. So the Razah took his younger brother and threw him into the pit. So his father, the Rebbe Marash, who found out or noticed what happened, summoned his son and said, "Why did you take your brother and do that to him?" He said, "Because I'm older than him. So Yosher has it, morality has it, justice has it, that I should be taller than him and he should be shorter than I am. But he is not. So I threw him in the pit to create an equilibrium and to restore reality to how it ought to be, that he should be shorter than me." So the Rebbe Marash said, "Next time what you should do is leave him on the ground and you should get up on a chair." He told him in Yiddish, "Severin hecher, leikmen ishtarein yenem, in abor mevert alein hecher." To become higher, you become higher. You don't put someone else, you don't degrade someone else. That doesn't make you higher. It appears to make us higher. When we define another person, "You're obnoxious, you're lowly," it somehow appears to make us better. A healthy person, a real spiritual person, doesn't deal with things that way. He's not even compelled to do that. It's not his life. It's not his territory. You don't have the urgency to do it. You don't even see it in those terms. You see it as a halacha. Have a wonderful week.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is chassidus.com.